Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
South Africa is an open economy, and that essentially means that we invite private investors in. We also have the opportunity to take our money offshore. And through that, whilst it presents a great level of opportunity, it does also come with a number of challenges in terms of adequately managing that money to make sure that it doesn't facilitate any fraud, participate in any corruption, or is not sourced illegally. And this is one of the reasons why we have seen the Financial Action Task Force place South Africa on the grey listing, essentially saying, you've got good controls, but you're not doing enough in terms of accountability. So tonight we thought we'd go a little deeper just to really understand when we talk about financial misconduct, malfeasance, money laundering, racketeering, and all these themes, what it actually means, how it actually works when the super wealthy and perhaps corrupt business people and politicians and individuals themselves tend to hide their assets, and how far law enforcement can go in catching up with this kind of white collar crime. Stephen Powell, head of ENS Africa, joins us now. ENS Africa's forensic practice. Oh, Stephen, I nearly gave you a promotion there. Joining us this evening. Such a pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Powell.
Great to speak to you as always, Gugu, and thank you for inviting me just to share some thoughts with listeners.
Thank you for your time. I always leave a lot more intrigued when it comes to our conversations. And this one is one that, as I sat back and thought about it with my producer and colleague, Sinen Jabulo, I thought, hold on, this is not entirely illegal, but there are ways within which assets can be hidden, which don't comply with the law, thus resulting in tax evasion versus avoidance, and obviously not having a clear and honest record of the source of income. So maybe let's just start by understanding the complexity, but where it is easy to err on the wrong side of the law.
Gugulethu, the schemes that fraudsters come up with are never ending. And as the authorities close down loopholes and identify some of these modus operandis, they develop new ideas and new techniques to conceal assets. But the authorities like SARS, the Revenue Service, the Asset Forfeiture Unit are well aware of the different mechanisms that the rogues utilize to try and conceal these assets. And the bad news for the rogues is that at the moment, as a result of the State Capture Commission and the exposure of all the corruption that took place in that, coupled to the grey listing that South Africa has been exposed to, the authorities are under more pressure than ever before to demonstrate that these laws are given effect to demonstrate active enforcement. So I think what we are going to see in the next couple of months in the build-up to the review of our grey listing, and we're hoping to get off the grey list by mid-year next year. We've been reviewed in February. We're hoping that law enforcement agencies will be able to demonstrate enough to convince the Financial Action Task Force that South Africa no longer deserves to be on the grey list. Mm-hmm. And in order to get there, I think we are going to see lots more asset forfeiture, lots more attachment of vehicles, properties, freezing of bank accounts, attachment of the proceeds in bank accounts from the authorities. And I'll touch on some of the ways that the crooks have been hiding assets, which the authorities are chasing down very, very robustly at the moment.
Sure, thank you so much, Mr. Powell. I'm excited because I am intrigued to actually hear what typical models are being used. I mean, we hear and learn examples around money laundering and
that's right. And you know, we heard about the sports cars that were being purchased by a syndicate that was operating in that coal belt area. And there were vehicle dealers that were exposed by Andre de Ruyter in his book who would house these vehicles for corrupt politicians and corrupt businessmen. And that type of thing, I must tell you, is well known to the authorities. And there are mechanisms that the authorities use to actually track these down, because, you know, asset forfeiture, the lifestyle audits that were introduced by government, these are useful mechanisms for the simple man on the street. But when it comes to syndicates, the authorities have to use greater levels of intelligence and greater levels of clandestine police work. So, you know, it's not just a question of going to a register at the, you know, to have a look on NATO's system to see who owns a vehicle, because the crooks don't put the vehicles in their own names. They keep it in the dealer's name, or they put it in the names of third parties. And I'll just share with you a case I did for one of the large municipalities a few years ago. You know, there we actually were following and tracking down a suspect who had made a huge amount. He'd made more than 27 million out of procurement from one of the big municipalities in less than a year. And what he had done is he supplied heavy duty equipment to the municipality. But when we analyzed him, he had zero fleet. He didn't have bulldozers, trucks, pickup trucks, etc. He had nothing. And when we confronted him, we put to him, you know, why would the municipality provide a contract to you to lease heavy duty vehicles if you have no fleet? And he said to me, Mr. Powell, you just don't understand anything about black empowerment. I've got a horde of subcontractors that have got fleets. And when I get the orders, I just issue an instruction to a subby. Subby does all of the work, sends an invoice to me. I invoice the city. And I said to him, but sir, why should the city have to work through you? If the municipality can contract these subcontractors directly, you're adding no value. What's the point of that? And when we continued this investigation, we identified an uncle of the suspect. And we saw the suspect was driving luxury motor cars. He had an AMG Mercedes vehicle. He had a big Jaguar and a third vehicle, and nothing was in his name on Natus. Everything was in the uncle's name. And we went across to the uncle and we interviewed the uncle, and he turned around to me and he said to me, Mr. Powell, these vehicles are not my vehicles. I'm just storing them for my nephew. We've put them in my name, because he said to me, you guys are investigating him, and it might be a good idea to park the assets in his name until this all boils over.
Thank goodness the uncle's honest.
Yeah, so we took an affidavit from the uncle, and the uncle was going to be a state witness against his nephew, which didn't bode very well for family relationships. But the question of motor vehicle dealers becoming involved in money laundering is a well-known scam to the authorities, because what happens with the crooks is when they get money out of fraud or bribery or corruption, it's dirty money and they can't just bank it. You know, so what they do is they go along to corrupt motor car dealers and they buy the sports cars. And what we find is that they don't even retain the sports car to enjoy it for a period of time. All they do is a couple of weeks after buying the vehicle, they sell it back to the dealer at a hugely lesser price. So the dealer makes a nice margin. He's happy. Sure. The dealer has collected cash from the drug dealer or fraudster, and the fraudster holds the asset for a couple of days or a couple of weeks, sells it back to the used car dealer, and suddenly the fraudster has got clean money that he can then use to put into a bank or pay a business debt, etc. And this is a money laundering scam that has been happening for quite a while. And there are groups of motor dealers who have already been arrested and are currently awaiting trial. And there are many others that are known to the authorities. So, you know, it's not that easy to conceal assets. And then the other thing that happens, particularly with corrupt politicians and government officials who work in departments where they're earning a salary of 400,000 per year, but suddenly they have a big 4x4 that costs 2-3 million. And there's a big question mark around how they acquire these assets. And often they will put the asset into family members' names. In one of my asset forfeiture matters, we dealt with a cocaine smuggler and we seized the assets of the cocaine smuggler, and he had a fleet of vehicles. But when we actually analyzed, he'd put the vehicles into names of random members of the public. Oh, so Google it, you could become the proud owner of a Ferrari without even knowing that this thing is registered in your name. And they just took random individuals, and he had bribed an official in the department's licensing division. And that way he thought he would evade detection by the asset forfeiture unit. But the problem for the drug dealer is that just doing a little bit of surveillance, the AFU was easily able to determine who was the actual beneficial owner of the vehicle, who was the driver of the vehicle, notwithstanding the fact that it was registered in a third party's name. So what I'm alluding to is that, you know, there are these scams. At the moment, South Africa is under pressure to make sure that we demonstrate enforcement to get off the grey list. And I think, you know, I'm optimistic we're going to see a lot more sports cars being seized than we've seen in the past. And a lot of these people are going to be held accountable. The problem we faced was that during the state capture years, there was a deliberate decapacitation of the NPA and the DPCI. These bodies are being rebuilt and they've been bolstered at the moment because there's been injections of more capital, more budget to the departments. There's been a prioritization. There was a task force set up to convert the findings of the State Capture Commission into successful prosecutions. And that task force is made up of a multidisciplinary team with representatives of various agencies, including the AFU, the DPCI,
these
SARS,
are specialized skills here, right?
So it's all positive news, Gugu.
Definitely positive news and specialized skills that are necessary. I'm so intrigued by these various structures that you've highlighted, especially when it comes to perhaps car dealerships. I'm intrigued to understand how about services businesses. We've often heard how people open up, I don't know, like a beauty salon or other aspects of business essentially to try to clean money. And I think perhaps if we understand just how some of these concepts do work, are there a few others of these that have fallen onto the radar of regulators or institutions in South Africa?
Absolutely. So restaurants, different services businesses, these are old tricks that have been employed by drug dealers and gangsters throughout the centuries in order to launder money and to create a clean income. In some of the asset forfeiture matters that I've dealt with, and I referred earlier to the cocaine smuggler that I seized assets from a few years ago. And there what happened is every year he would declare on his returns to the revenue authority that the individual was unemployed. But if you looked at his lifestyle, he was flying overseas like a movie star. He was traveling extensively, going on luxurious, expensive holidays. He had a fleet of motor vehicles, and he had a whole portfolio of properties. And what had happened is he used the proceeds of the cocaine smuggling business to go and buy this portfolio of properties. And then he became a slum landlord. He was leasing out the properties to third parties and getting a clean income. And that's one of the ways that drug dealers, fraudsters, corrupt politicians, etc., launder their funds. But the problem they have and the difficulty they now face is that with the clampdown on money laundering in order for South Africa to get off the grey list, all of these different role players are coming under scrutiny. And one of the areas where the FATF criticized South Africa is they said that supervisory bodies for non-financial business professionals like estate agents and even lawyers is not adequate in South Africa. There's got to be greater scrutiny, greater supervision, and greater control to prevent money laundering. So when the drug dealer goes and buys a property today, there is a 99% chance that the estate agent handling the transaction is not going to just let the drug dealer pay with 5 million rand in cash, which he may have gotten away with doing in the past. That estate agent is going to report it to the FIC, and the FIC is going to report it in turn to the DPCI and the various bodies that investigate. And the same applies to the lawyer that does the conveyancing. If there isn't a reasonable explanation as to source of funds, source of wealth, that attorney doing the conveyancing is going to fulfill a reporting obligation and report it to the FIC. And each of these different bodies, will have a reporting obligation. And because of the clampdown on enforcement, you're going to find that there are not going to be many willing players that are willing to put their own selves at risk by not reporting. And we're going to see more reporting than ever before. And as I said earlier, more enforcement than ever before. And hopefully that will be enough to convince the FATF that we've done enough to strengthen our anti-money laundering regime.
Yeah.
I can't help but remember the Aston Martin that was parked under a tarpaulin at the home of Nomvula Mokonyane, the former minister of the Department of Water and Sanitation. And there was an electrician from Basasa doing repairs at Nomvula's home. And the electrician testified that he saw this vehicle under a tarpaulin, and he couldn't resist lifting the cover to see what it was, because why would someone put a cover over a vehicle if it's already covered in a garage? And when he pulled the cover up, he saw it was an Aston Martin. And later on, Judge Zondo asked some questions of Nomvula. The evidence leader wanted to know who paid for the car. And it turned out that she paid $1 million. $2 million came from, I think they were quoted as friends of the family. And the next question was, did the friends of the family happen to do work at the department? And the answer was yes. So you can see, you know, what happens with people is, if you're going to enjoy the proceeds of crime, you're going to receive money you're not entitled to. The irresistible impulse for the criminal is to buy the fancy cars and to buy the fancy houses. And they just can't resist the temptation to enjoy the proceeds of crime. And that's when they get caught, because they make it easy for authorities to identify assets that are well beyond the means of the individual. But even when they don't do that, and when they conceal it by buying businesses, buying small services businesses, or leasing vehicles, you know, the authorities still have ways to identify their true ownership and the true parties enjoying those assets. And it's easy to then initiate proceedings to attach.
This is so intriguing, because this is where we typically see people set up businesses or trusts, even specs, to kind of conceal the identity in this involvement. Mr. Powell, I am forever intrigued, and I think this certainly deserves a follow-up conversation, just for us to understand not only the kind of fraud that does take place, but the capacity that's required to identify this. Because in as much as you need the technical skills, it also seems as though you just need to have that additional eye and ear of curiosity to say, that's peculiar, you know, to literally lift the cover off of a vehicle whilst it's parked in a garage, just to have that heightened level of curiosity, but also knowing how to connect the dots. It's such a pleasure speaking to you this evening, sir. Thank you so much again for your time.
Thank you, Gugule, too, and thank you, listeners, and thank you for the invite. Take care, too.
Looking forward to touching base with you again, sir. That's Stephen Powell, the head of ENS Africa's forensics practice, and really speaks to the intricacies of understanding accounting, of law, the frameworks and the structures that transactions are typically performed under. And as you can tell, understanding the basics of the technicalities, but just being a lot more curious in asking some of the basic questions. It's really important work that they do, identifying individuals who might be behind some of the biggest syndicates, crimes in South Africa, especially white-collar crime that appears to be a lot creative in methods of getting away with it. But share your thoughts with us. I definitely think it's one that we do need to pay a heightened focus to as South Africans, just to really understand the inner workings of typically how it is that criminals do get away with white collar crime, especially from a business point of view.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.